Hey, everybody. Before we get started with today's episode, I just wanted to remind you to find us and give us a review or comment on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast.fm, or Podbeam. In addition, we would also like to have you join the conversation. If you disagree, want to chime in, or just have a comment about my inflammatory statements regarding the French, please let us know. You can contact us on Twitter at tjanke, that's T-J-A-N-K-E, or by email at cycletyler@gmail.com. And once again, you can also comment on whatever podcast service you are subscribing from. For today's episode, I would like to thank Team Mike's Bikes for the chance to sit down with one of their cyclists to discuss bike racing and so much more. I hope you enjoy the conversation.
When I got interested in the sport, I started riding, joined a club in Sacramento, Team City, still a club team. And there were some pretty cool guys in there who helped me get started. I got this Carbon road bike that was like two sizes too big for me. It was like a 54. And the guy sold to me, he's like, yeah, sure, it looks like it fits. And I showed up to this group ride, and then everyone just like was like,
no. Was this a shop that sold you, or just
no,
some
it was
random
some Craigslist guy? And I was like, Craigslist. Oh, I was like, Carbon Road, I was great, you know, had, you know, index shifter or whatever. And then,
back when you were dating on Craigslist too.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Or more like Misconnections.
And you get a bike.
Yeah, and I get a bike. Yeah. Two for one, only one of that.
Greetings, welcome back to the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is episode 4, which means if you've listened to the past 3, you know that I'm usually solo or with one guest. I guess we had Nate Dunn on with us earlier. Well, today we have Andrew Shimizu, a young up-and-coming cyclist, a man of high intellect, a lot of experience on the bike. So we're going to dive right in. I want to get to some specifics, first of all, about the Cascade Classic, which you just finished, right?
Yeah,
just did. How many days, how was the race, and how did you end up doing?
Let's see. There's the road race, time trial. I'm not sure how many days. Road race, time trial.
I'll help you out. I think it was 5.
Oh, there was, yeah, there we go.
Thursday
see,
through.
I'm still burned from it. It was good. So we did, I'm on Team Mike's Bikes, and we went up there with a pretty good crew, and it's just this year was really fast. It was a lot faster than last year. They moved it back up to the UCI race, and we had, you know, like Pete Stetna and Alex Howes and Kilrain and those World Tour guys who had done the Giro this year. But it was a struggle for me every day to just sort of finish 100th every day, but it was good. It was a lot of fun as a team, and we had one guy do really well. He's in the top 20 GC.
So I did see that they had like a combo, a national team of made up of these guys you just mentioned.
Exactly.
Howes, Reinen, Stetna. Well, like you said, they did the Giro. So, and I saw it was a 2.2 category UCI, which actually you look at the Tour of Utah going right now, which is only a 2.
Uh-huh.
And the Tour of Colorado, which is also a 2. Unless I'm mistaken, I think the higher the number, the more difficult.
Sure.
That's it?
I'll roll with that. I'm not sure.
So how was it with those guys in the race? And what did you hear any conversation about why they were doing this or any
I'm just
feedback?
Guessing they probably had a lull in their season and they all just were buddies and wanted to do a cool race. You know, I mean, they were only 3 guys, and they had some other guys on their national team, composite team. But, you know, they won a lot of stages, but they weren't driving it on the front, you know, all day. There were full squads from UHC and Jelly Belly and Holowesco, and some other teams that were just going at it and rally nonstop. But it was just a lot picked. It was definitely the hardest stage race that we did this year.
So what other ones have you done this year? I know you did San Dimas and Redlands. Any other big ones? Did you Joe Martin or anything like that yet?
No, we didn't do any of those this year. No, yeah, so San Dimas and Redlands were actually our only other stage races we did. But Redlands is a classic. And that was a dream race for me to do. That's a race I've just wanted to do since I started cycling.
How was now Cascade is one of the oldest, longest running U.S. I guess stage races. I remember doing it when I was, well, maybe your age. But how was it in comparison to Redlands and San Dimas as far as speed? Oh,
it was a lot faster. Yeah. I mean, Redlands was really fast, regardless. But Cascade, it just seemed like every day those long climbs just ramped up the pace and just people were just getting destroyed. There was one day, the Mount Bachelor stage, it started with a 20-mile climb, and there was a gruppetto of probably 50 guys off the back that did the whole race that never made contact with the field. I was in the last group to make contact with the field going over the top, and there was
now a group did of you 10 do this? So did you do the same pros. As I want to say the Cat 2s, where they started in band, rode up to the top of Mount Bachelor, and then went counterclockwise around?
Yeah,
is that the same?
I'm not sure if the Cat 2s did that. I think they did. Yeah, they definitely.
But that's what you did.
Yeah, that's what we did. Yeah.
So yeah, that it is a long, gradual climb all the way up to the summit to start out with.
Exactly.
And you made it over the top initially.
No. So I there was just gaps forming, and there was a lot of groups on the road. But the group I was in was probably 10 guys, and more than half of them were pros. And we just drilled the backside and drilled it, and we didn't catch the field. We actually caught a group that wasn't even the field first. And then finally, that was about 50 guys, and then finally made contact with the field probably like 30 minutes after the top of the climb. So that was like, you know, that was really hard.
Was Friday that stage the most difficult? Because I know there's the McKenzie Pass, which is day one, and then obviously the Aubrey Butte.
Yeah.
Those are both tough days in themselves, but which one was the most?
I have to say, Bachelor was probably the hardest.
Is that because you just came disconnected sooner?
Well, yes, but I mean, that's a hard way to start any race, an hour of climbing. But yeah, they were going for the K1 points on that one. And then the McKenzie Pass was not as bad because it was just flat the whole day, and it had a, 10 mile climb at the end, which was hard, but you know, it was a flat rate. Well, actually, I take that back. There was a pretty good climb towards the beginning I forgot about, and that split the field. But we got back together after that because everyone sat up. But that was, I still
a little
have
panic.
Yeah, I still have nightmares about the Bachelor stage. No, not really. I mean, it was hard. It was a good experience, but it was.
How did it go
hard
for you, like team support wise? I mean, you were there to offer support this time. You were
exactly
not GC man, right?
Yeah, no, for me, you know, I had kind of a hard time all week because about the couple days before the race I fell and I sort of smashed my thumb pretty bad, and I didn't realize about it. Actually, I had like a hairline fracture, so going into the race and it just felt really bad. You know, I was like, I kept thinking it'd get better, but I started, you know, Tuesday, the day before the race started, my thumb was just like going crazy, and so I put in a brace and it was fine racing, but every time you get a pothole, it was just jarring. You know, that those type of races, for me at least, I had been in it 100% mentally, and that was just sort of hard for me to wrap my head around. But, I mean, it's better when you're racing for somebody else than yourself. So we had Cameron, who did awesome, and so that was enough motivation there to get through each day, just kind of getting him bottles when he could or moving him up. But for me, it was more or less just surviving.
Yeah, well, so last year you did the race. You weren't on Mike's bikes last year. You were on this data-driven athlete
team.
Yeah.
Some random.
But obviously you went there without any support, and you surfed yourself. I mean, you did the whole thing, which is a little different than what you obviously did this year.
Yeah.
But how was the race as far as you? I know you were injured. And look, a hand injury can make a difference, right? I mean, their bodies are – there's chemical issues that happen in your body when you do injure yourself. I don't care if it's your hand or whatever.
Sure.
And then just the mental part. So, but how was it this year, just you from last year? Did you feel like you had moved up a step at least?
It's weird because I know I'd moved up a step, but the race was just so much faster that it was sort of hard for me to wrap my mind around that. Like last year, I mean, the race was hard, but it was definitely nowhere near as fast as this year. So, you know, coming to it, I love Cascade. I've done it every year since I started racing from a 5, and it was hard to come to it. It's my favorite race, and just get totally smashed. I mean, it's a little bit of your blow to your ego, but this year was definitely a lot harder. Even though I know I was faster, but you know, each race is its own.
Yeah, so there's something I want to talk to you about here. Mm-hmm. And so let me ask you, how was the last day's race for you? Where were you in contention to the front finishers? Were
no,
you?
Nowhere. Okay. There was no contention on my part. No, so it's like a 5-lap circuit, just up and down all day. And there's this one sort of wall section. I think it's called
stair step.
Yeah, but there's this one section that's a pretty steep little wall, Archie Briggs. And at the first lap, I was one of the last guys to make it over. I look back and I see there's daylight. And I was like, this is going to be a short race. But it was just, they were going pretty fast from the first 3 laps. And they let up for 1 lap, which was good. And then the 4th lap, the Holowesco team blew it up for Robin Carpenter. And I was on my limit all day. And so there's a split in the field. And so there's probably about 50 guys that went forward. And I was on the odd end of that one. We rolled in a gruppetto, and that was nice. But it was a little strange because it was my first year not really being in the mix for the finish somewhat. You know, every year I've done it, I've always raced all the way to the end. So taking a sort of lap early was kind of a weird mix.
Yeah. So I don't know if you knew about the whole brouhaha that happened during the finish with mm-hmm. Stephen Bissett
yeah.
of a Silver Pro team
yeah.
running into, I think it was Allison.
Yeah.
Whitney Allison,
yeah.
What did you hear about that? Because then I want to ask you kind of what I read from the DS, Gord Frazier, in his comments. And then the race itself. And anyway, so what did you hear just being in the mix?
Well, I mean, it's...
And maybe you can describe what you heard what actually happened.
Yeah, so I obviously wasn't there to see it, but our guy was there. He said it was just... You make this left turn off of the road to the finishing... I mean, it's a finishing climb. It's a really steep climb.
Especially after the whole... Well, maybe let me describe first. The issue was... The pro men's race was going to be running into catching the women's pro race, and they decided since it was a UCI on both ends, they weren't going to neutralize anybody. They're just going to let it
because they're both in the last race there. It was just there was some mix up with there was a crash in the men's 2 race, I think, that kind of offset the timing, and so they caught them, and it wasn't like they caught them on a wide part of the road. They literally caught them in the finish, I think, and that's just there's not much that they can do there. And from what I heard, the guy was just gunning it, and he probably just was looking down or something and ran to the back of Whitney. I really did not see it, and only heard secondhand what happened.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate for both fields. Yeah.
Yeah, and in Steven's defense and Whitney, I mean, no, he didn't. He said, "I put my head down. I ran into her. Da da da. That was a problem." But here's what I kind of want to get at, because what you had then was Gord Frazier basically ripping the race organizers.
Yeah.
Which I get it. And so my question is a balance between you're going to a race, you're exerting yourself, you're paying money maybe to get there, and you're having stuff happen during the race that you're upset about and you're voicing your concern.
Right.
Then you have the race organizers. They've been putting this on. The same guy's been the race director for 14 years, and the word is they're not going to be UCI next year.
Mm-hmm.
The race might not even happen. Matter of fact, this year they didn't have a masters category. They cut a bunch of stuff out.
Right, yeah.
So now you have riders and DSs complaining, maybe rightfully so, and then you have a race organizer that says, screw it, I'm out of here.
Right.
So what's the balance in a sense of how much you can complain, and yet how much is, you just suck up as a rider and say, hey, I'm grateful for this race to even be on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you definitely demand a level of professionalism. Going to these races, it's a bigger deal for the silver team than it is for someone like me who's just there to do it. This is their job, obviously, right? But, I mean, from what I heard of how it happened, it was just kind of a fluke, and they really couldn't do much about the timing at the finish. And I don't know Gord, but it's hard to put on a local crit. I remember we did like the Golden State stage race, and how much stressful that was. I can't imagine doing the permitting for 5 days of racing and all the stuff that goes into it. And no one's making money off of this. Those guys aren't. They're doing this to keep the sport alive, essentially. I mean, like, race after race just disappears. Philly didn't happen this year. All these other races that were great races, you know, show up with 30 guys that used to be hundreds in there. And so, I don't know. I honestly, the Cascade Classic guys, I think they did an outstanding job. And they did the best they can with what they're working with. And they still put on a really great race despite, you know, not a lot of funding and all the other stuff that goes into dying sport.
Yeah. Well, then that's, I mean, then you bring it back just on our local level and the races we do. And, you know, there's things I see in the Northern California Facebook about ripping on, you know, certain races are ruining this or whatever. And,
right.
And I think it's the same thing of, you know, I couldn't imagine being, and I'm not like defending, you know, bad things to happen at mm-hmm. races, you know, cars on the course and all those kind of things. You're like, come on, what's it?
Yeah.
But yet, so there's that balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you take it all the way back to, I'm sure you heard of during the Tour de France, the La Course.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, you know what that is, the race they put on for the women.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been listening to, you know, different commentary about that at the time. And some of the younger women are like thrilled about it. Mm-hmm. And then some of the older ones are just, they're really ripping it apart. And once again, it reminds me of that whole thing of the women's sport might be in some sort of flux, right? It's not, this is the men's race. It's the Tour de France. Now you mm-hmm. have the women and some of them are complaining. Some of them are just glad to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what responsibility do you feel as a rider or do you about how you go to these races and how you treat organizers or how you are being treated?
I can't imagine showing up to one of these races and being an organizer and having people yelling at them for, I don't know, doing the best they can. I mean, like, none of those people, that's not their jobs. Like, I'm sure they all have day jobs, and doing this is a huge stress, and they're doing it because they love the sport. Like, a race like Cascade, you don't put on a race like that, you know, other than for the love of it.
And I guess the ASO one doesn't necessarily fall into that because Tour de France, that is.
Yeah,
because,
exactly.
I mean, they are making a lot
of money. Exactly, yeah. But on that end, it's like, the course is good, but, I can see some of the riders complain that it's just like throwing a bone at the women's field. Like, oh, here you can have this little slice of the pie, the crumbs, while the men get these races. There used to be a women's tour, right? There used to be, and, it definitely feels like it's like, letting the women moonlight in the men's, you know, this is the men's time, and so.
So, what do you think of the fact that it is the men's Tour de France?
Right.
So, I get when they say, "Oh, it feels like we're just an add-on." Well, mm-hmm. the reality is, it is. I mean, when I'm watching the tour, I'm hardly watching any other bike racing.
Right.
And it's like it is. You know what I've always said is, if you treat women's cycling as women's cycling, mm-hmm. I'd be interested. When you try to add on to men's cycling,
mm-hmm.
then it feels weird. As in, you have golf,
mm-hmm.
right? Golf and tennis are kind of two sports that the women, national, television and money wise, they do pretty well at.
Yeah.
But I couldn't imagine golf having like the Masters tournament. But right before the Masters, they're going to do a 9-hole thing for the women.
Yeah.
Why? Because the women have their own tournament.
Right.
And I think if you have the climb up the Izoard was pretty exciting. I don't know if you saw it. The other one was a little weird, but it's what it is. So maybe not have it with the tour because it is always going to be a spectacle compared to the tour. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it is.
I'm trying to demean women's cycling.
No.
Saying you've got a great product on your own. Let's see those short, punchy races.
But it's hard to. I guess it would be hard because it's like, I mean, the media is already there for the men's race, and they have a hard time getting their own coverage and all that other stuff. So. I mean, I could see they're probably doing the best they could with, you know, adding them both in there. And I mean, you have that for the classics too, right? Like they had like the Strada Bianca. I think the women went first or either second, but then it was like the same time as the men's finish. And if you watch the finish, you know, it was an amazing race, but there's like 20 people milling around the finish, and the men's race, everyone's crowding the streets, you know, and I don't know. That's a hard balance, and I don't have the answers to that one.
No,
for sure. I don't think either of us do, to be honest. But I definitely would like to see some more women's races that are. They have their own races where they don't have to compete with the men. For airtime, where they're women specific stage races.
Did you ever see the Orida stage race?
Oh, I didn't see that.
It's Potatoes, Oregon, Idaho. That's the company, and it was in Boise and around Idaho, and it was going a long time. I mean, from when I was younger, up until just a few years ago.
Okay.
And one of the sponsors, I'm trying to remember, they had also sponsored a men's team, Exergy or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
They were going to come in as a big sponsor, and then it was like this whole sham of a business or something. So they went out, but that was a big race, and they had like Tour Tracker, just like we see with Tour Utah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I tuned in just to see that. I mean, it was it was good racing.
The women's field is just, I don't know, I find it way more interesting, because I mean the races are shorter, but that means it's a lot more racing from the gun. It's not this
when I said shorter, I didn't mean it in a bad way. The short stage of the tour this year.
But it's just like, I mean, the tour, like, how many hours can you watch of them milling around the peloton for 4 hours and just nothing going on? I mean, I think that's something everyone's fighting for, is the equal coverage, equal pay. I mean, equal race winnings, as it should. But like I said, I don't have an answer for that.
Well,
unfortunately, no, I'm sorry.
That's sad.
No, that's what we're here for.
Well, you might have an answer to. Tell me about how you got involved in cycling. Just kind of break it back. I don't need to go into a long, drawn-out thing.
Well, when I was a boy.
Yeah, that's the whole, I don't know, if you've seen Goonies, where he's like, tell me everything you know.
Yes. Let's see. I started cycling 2012. I was always in endurance sports, and swam, played water polo in high school. And after high school, I was looking for another sport to get into, and I used to ride this old, 80s road bike for cross training, for like swimming and water polo. And then my dad raced a little bit, he did when he was younger. Nothing like super crazy, but he'd always talk about it, and it just seemed like an interesting sport. And then my friend and I, after high school, started riding a bunch. We did like a bike tour, and then
what do you mean bike tour?
Oh, we rode our bikes from San Francisco down to San Diego.
Oh, well, that's pretty big. That's like, big time.
It was fun. It was, they call it bike packing now, but it was still touring when I did it. I guess it wasn't as cool.
Did you have panniers
and all 9 euros with the bags and all that crap. But yeah, that was fun. And then everyone talks about like the freedom you get on a bicycle, and I never felt like I was really free when on that thing. I was just like, how many more miles to the next campsite? But I mean, I when I got interested in the sport, I started riding, joined a club in Sacramento, Team City. They're still a club team. And there were some pretty cool guys in there who helped me get started. I got this carbon road bike that was like two sizes too big for me. It was like a 54. And the guy sold to me, he's like, yeah, sure, it looks like it fits. And I showed up to this group ride, and then everyone was just like,
was this a shop that sold you, or just
no,
some random
some Craigslist
guy?
And I was like, I was like, carbon rope, I was great, had, index shifter or whatever. And then,
back when you were dating on Craigslist too.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Or more like Misconnection.
And you get a bike.
Yeah. And I get a bike. Yeah. Two for one, or maybe more than that. And then the guys were, really nice. It's just, one of them essentially gave me a bike to ride, and I raced a little bit, but didn't really know anything about training or any of that stuff. I started getting into it, and I was pretty good because I was somewhat fit from my endurance sports. And then,
did you find that easier? Because cycling can really hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
So did you find that having pushed yourself with water polo and dating on Craigslist, these are already things you're
all painful experiences. All these things exactly, right. Yeah, push the pain threshold up there. No, I mean, like, we used to do these stupid workouts in water polo, and then our coach was, I mean, he's like your standard, like, coach who's like, you're not working hard until you're puking type of thing. So, like, my threshold for pain was up there. So I would, like, show up to these races not really trained, just kind of ride my bike, and then just be able to suffer and just clog along with them, I was decently good at climbing at the time, and so it came a little easier to me. And so the next year when we start, that's when Nate, met you guys, started that data driven team, and then started getting more serious into it. And then Yeah, and then I started just kind of, you know, pegging away at the upgrades, and I was still in school and working, so it was, riding was sort of like a secondary thing, and I don't think I ever really made it, I don't think I ever let myself, even essentially until like this year, like let myself be like, oh, all I'm doing is riding. Because I saw so many guys who are just, you know, like 27 working in a coffee shop, and they're like, I'm going to be a professional cyclist as a tattoo, you know. And I was like, ah, well, I should probably work my ankles here. So I mean, I was living at home and, like, going to community college. It wasn't hard to do both. But, it just kind of kept chipping away at the upgrade points. I mean, you see these guys who come out. I mean, there's guys on my team that have only been riding for, like, 3 years. And they just blow up on the scene, and they're just... they just blow through the categories, and it's almost a little embarrassing being like, yeah, it took me like four, you know, like one upgrade every year, but then like that's, I guess that's kind of
Do you think that serves them okay? I mean, are these guys just freaks? Are they really good?
Probably both. Like, yeah, they're I mean, they're all freaks, but they're,
do you think
I
they
mean,
miss a little bit of strategy race in there?
No, I mean, yeah, I mean it's how much strategy?
Not them specifically.
No,
that's
no,
the
not
other
them specifically. No, but like how much strategy are you gonna get in the Cat 3s field? Like I remember racing this. You know, I'm racing with a team, and it's just like, oh, we're gonna blow the field apart, and it's just like you don't really. I didn't really learn like what it was to like actually race like a legit team for a while, you know. And then even so, I mean, even with you guys, you know, when we'd show up to a race, we'd have a plan, but it was more or less we're at the will of the field. In racing with Mike's, it's like you have a plan, you have a job, and
yeah, until you're the guy going back and you're suffering and you're going back and getting bottles, and and then you're coming back to the field and you see the guy in the end, it's like hanging on, and you've got to go past him to the guy in the front to give your bottles out.
Yeah,
you know, that's when you start to realize your worth, I guess, in this sport. But
I get exactly right. Yeah, no, that well, I haven't not there, but no, I mean, yeah. So I just kind of kept pegging away at that, and then I went away to school and finish up.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to the prestigious California State University, Channel Islands in Camarillo.
Oh, that's a long name.
I know, very long name.
So, what'd you get your degree in?
I was studying history.
History. Well, the question was, what'd you get your degree in?
Exactly.
Is that what you got your degree in?
Yeah.
You did graduate, right?
I did graduate. Yeah. They got all paper and everything. Yes.
Oh.
But yeah. I know.
Did you attend your march? Did you graduate? Did you?
My march.
What did they call
riot?
It?
Your graduation ceremony.
Andrew's Lives Matter.
Yeah.
No, like, you know, graduation ceremony.
Yeah. I did
the whole gown and stuff.
I did.
Some
people
skip that now.
Some people skip that, and I was like, I don't know, I paid for it, so I went, and it was cool, my parents were there, and family was all there, and they're all super supportive of me racing and doing the school thing, and I, you know, like I said, like, there's so many guys I know that have just had no problem with, you know, racing, working, and going to school full-time, and doing it all, and I think I found there that I couldn't focus on both, doing them well. I would do them both really bad, or do one really well. And it was always more pouring my time into cycling and then letting the studying take the back seat. So, like, my last year in school, I was still coaching with Nate, but I just was like, I'm going full into school. And I was really happy with what I did. I got pretty good grades, but the cycling was just kind of there on the side. But then after that was done, last year, 2016, I graduated. It was nice to make this next year just mostly about cycling.
So you're working now, right?
I am working now. Yes.
You've told me this before, and I couldn't explain it. So what do you do for job? Or is it proprietary?
I work for the state parks, doing historical reviews for. I'm a historian for the state parks.
Oh, so something you actually went to college for.
Yeah, somewhere.
And so what does that entail? I mean,
writing history, man. History doesn't write itself. That's what we're here for.
Is that like a slogan you guys have?
Me and the other, historian, my other coworker. Well, that's actually his slogan. I think I stole it. But this is also his. It's essentially like what a biologist does, but for houses. So, like, we do, essentially, we work in historic preservation. So all the state parks has a bunch of historic structures or resources column, and a lot of what we do is project review to make sure mitigating impacts to historic resources. And then there's a bunch of other things. Occasionally we get to go out and record resources that haven't been recorded, so taking pictures of them and measurements and architectural details and stuff like that.
So you get to travel a little bit with that?
Yeah, actually we get to travel quite a bit. So we're in the Northern Service Center is our division, and we based in Sacramento but service all the parks north of essentially LA. So yeah, I mean, I've been up to Humboldt, been down to Hearst Castle and San Simeon and everywhere in between.
Now, did you do something at Hearst Castle, like some sort of renovation, or can you talk about it?
Personally, I'm not the one laying the brick, but no, they're retiling one of the pools there outdoor. So I went down there for a meeting with that.
Do you have to like make sure it's historically correct? Is that what mm-hmm. you're doing? Like,
yeah, I mean, like I take more of a secondary role, but
just
me. Yeah, no, but yeah, definitely. Working with architects and people like that to make sure, yeah, like they're essentially keeping to there's standards and codes for historic buildings and trying to keep them in line with that.
So I noticed you've gotten into photography lately as well. So is this kind of been a byproduct of what you were doing, and you know, is that any connection there, or is this just
I've been interested in photography I think I've always been interested in it, but like the job allows me to go to a lot of these cool, like kooky places or see things that people don't normally see.
Yeah.
And so I've made a habit of taking my camera with me and just trying to record whatever I'm seeing is interesting.
What kind of camera? What do you have?
I have the main one I use is it's a medium format film camera. It's a Hasselblad 500 cm. It's a cool one.
The word I understood there was film. So yes. You're developing?
Yeah, does this work? Yeah. So
I don't see the 1 hour photo booths anymore.
No, but they're it's cool. In Sacramento, in terms of film photography, I think we got it pretty good. We can get our film developed downtown. This shop does it like in an hour or two. Or our friend's shop in East Sac, he does that. And we've actually started shooting with a large format camera, so like the big Ansel Adams type cameras for
the hood.
The big
flame that you have.
Not exactly, but yeah, it's somewhat. Yeah, one of those big viewfinder cameras. But I've actually been bringing a lot some of the races too, and I think that is probably where I've been most proud of it, because I have a good collection of immediately post race shots of my teammates and the team, and just trying to kind of capture a lot of that. But it's funny because I look at the pictures and I'm like, oh, there's my teammate caked in salt, but then I'm forgetting that I did the same race too. You know, I was right there, but I was still walking around taking pictures, and maybe I didn't go hard enough. I don't know. That's probably what it is. Yeah.
Back to cycling here. We got I read this article this last week about Cadel Evans.
Uh-huh.
Did you happen to see anything out of this?
No.
Okay, so
sorry, I'm not the best person.
Let me just read a few lines from it, okay? This is from a story in Australia where he was doing this podcast.
Yeah.
And the title of the article said, Cadel Evans reveals what makes him a physical freak.
Okay.
And then this is what he said. As an endurance cyclist, you're always at a constant state of overtraining. So your resting heart rate will always be sitting 10 to 15 beats per minute above where it normally should be. I didn't have a super low heart rate, quote, this is what he said, but it would drop below 35 to 40 beats per minute. And then he says, you're talking to a person who has a great sensitivity to their body. And this is the part I like. I can manipulate it, his heart rate, emotionally and with breathing to reduce it down to 32 beats per minute. We would be at threshold. I had a great ability as a rider to sit at my limit and in the red, so to speak, above threshold for long periods of time, an hour, half an hour, an entire climb or two climbs. In my first Tour de France, I spent both climbs at threshold or above. Physiologically is not actually possible. So he's saying he would do something that was physiologically not actually possible. I was a bit underdone coming back. Anyway, he talks about those. I know he's talking to a podcast here that maybe they don't know anything about cycling.
Sure.
And that's kind of the way it was, but he actually says he can manipulate his heart rate. Yeah. And then he can sit at a threshold that's not physically possible.
Okay.
Can you do anything like that? Do you have any of these superpowers to manipulate your heart rate?
I got
or any other bodily
all
function.
All sorts of traits. Well, I'm not getting into that one. Yeah, all sorts of tricks. I mean, considering I haven't ridden with a heart rate meter for probably, probably about 2 or 3 years. Sure, I can manipulate my heart rate.
do you think it's possible?
Cadell Evans is a freak, and I'll take his word for it. I mean, I will never race it. Any sort of close to a Tour de France, so if that's what it takes, then sure.
I just thought it was coming. You know, actually, what I saw was the same thing he talked about, going and hiding off in the mountains and training where no one knew he was at.
Right.
And the interesting
doping
part was
control doesn't know where he's
well,
at.
Well, that it was Michael Rasmussen had tweeted this story originally out, and then it was just kind of comical because that's.
Well, what about you? What's your? I mean, you were a pro. What would you? What are your physiological trick? Cycling wise, your tricks.
Physiological tricks. I don't know. Suffering. And even then, it really wasn't that great.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's.
I mean,
question.
You would never talk about yourself as a.
No. Never.
Never. Yeah.
So I won't now.
I won't now. No, but like, do you? I mean, I don't know. I don't. I had no idea about any of these tricks. Are there anything that's carried over from your?
What's interesting is you talk about heart rate. So right. When I was training and racing, we didn't have power meters
right. At least
that you could afford. I think Greg LeMond had something, but
yeah, back in the
40s. It was all heart rate. Yeah, exactly. It's all heart rate, and man, you had to get off to change the derailleur in the back.
Yeah. Right.
So I didn't have that luxury of knowing about power, and it was right. Now you would record my heart rate, and you know, 32 to 40 isn't odd. I mean, that's what I'd be like in the mornings.
Okay.
But you know the breakthrough of the power meter is much more specific because right. Those days where you're doing the stage races and your heart rate's just not getting up, but you know you still can do the power.
Right.
So
right.
I don't know what that says, but are there any tricks from the day? No. Yeah. We had when float pedals came in. That was good.
That was really
good. Yeah. Yes, I remember when shifting on your handlebars, your brake hoods came about too.
Jeez.
So
yeah.
What are you riding now?
Like, we got a pretty sweet setup. We have the Specialized Tarmac with the Ultegra DI2, electronic shifting, 11 speed. So that's pretty good. So
have you had any issues like Rigoberto Urán with his shifting with yours?
The Copperopolis road race, it's pretty bumpy in that. So the shifters are plugged into the handlebars. And I guess when I routed mine, I didn't route it with enough slack, so it was pretty taut, and I guess I hit a bump, and my front derailleur came unplugged, so I was stuck in my big ring for the Copperopolis for about, I think, lost 3 of 5 laps or something like that, and that was a...
So which gear was it in?
It was just stuck in the big ring.
The rear was
still
working.
The rear was fine, but I mean, there were some pretty steep sections of that climb, and I was amazed with myself for even making it over the top.
Winters road race a few years ago, I had that one lap to go through the start finish, and someone had crashed behind me. I'm not saying it was, I didn't do anything.
sure.
But it ripped my DI2 wire out.
Yeah.
And I was stuck in my 13.
Oh, okay.
But I had to front.
So you're...
I made it, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm just going to keep riding.
Yeah.
And I made it over that stupid climb in the 13. And actually, then I was able to sprint just fine. So, because that's finished. But that's all unique. Well, so what do you got coming up for the rest of the year? are you done? I mean, it's just end of July, August now.
Yeah. I mean, what, should I be doing more?
I don't know. I mean, you know, are you burnt out? There's a our season's actually extended. I don't know if you've looked at the calendar.
Oh, no, I haven't looked
at the calendar. Races out through September.
Yeah, no. Yeah, so we got the whole Cal Cup is coming up.
Uh-huh.
Starting tomorrow in Patterson. Yeah.
I'll be skipping that.
Yeah, I might be busy with that one, too.
There's a pass in it.
Yeah,
climbing stuff.
Yeah, pass grade. Those are all hard ones. No, I'm kind of winding down the season. I think I was feeling a little burnt going into Cascade. No, I was definitely, because I mean, I had probably the full season I'd had ever, and there were pretty difficult races, for me, going on the road every weekend, and I loved it. That's all I wanted to do since I started racing, was just to travel and ride with a team and get to these races like Redlands and Cascade and, you know, Nationals and Louisville. And,
Nationals. Yeah. We didn't talk about that. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you want to go into that or not. Yeah,
that's good. We did really well there. We got third in the road race and then top 10 in the crit. But that was another cool experience. I'd never done the Elite Nationals. I did do the U23 Nationals in Tahoe, but I finished that one, but that was pretty insane. But it was pretty cool coming in knowing that we had a good shot at winning.
And you guys did podium, right?
Yeah, right. So Reichert got third in the road race, and then, you know, to his and Cam's credit, they did a ton of work. So I had fold moves and found myself into a break, and there was just so many strong guys, and I was on my limit getting into the break, and it was not a good situation for me to be in. And I'm glad the team agreed, because they decided they should pull it back. And so I, even sitting on, it's just like the way that course was, there wasn't more than a minute of just straightaway, you know, flat. It was up and down all day, and it was like through
where was it at?
City Park. It was in I don't know. It was in this
give
park
me a state.
In Louisville.
Okay.
Yeah, Kentucky. So they put the team on the front to try to pull it back, and no one worked with them. So they blew themselves up, and then Cam and Chris pulled back, you know, this really strong, really, really strong break. If they didn't work, that break would have gone, and they would have stayed away. And so they ended up pulling it back all the way to the end, and then Reichert was still able to sprint for third. It was a really weird, tight turn. It was like an uphill turn and then to a downhill sprint. It was kind of kooky, but yeah, I was really, yeah, really impressed with how they did there. And that was another fun experience. Like, the team has been so awesome with getting me to the races. And I mean, there's no way I'd be able to race half these races on my own dime and budget.
You're planning on racing with them next year? Contracts, talks.
Yeah, it's transfer season. I don't know if I'll get transferred out the back.
I know an attorney that can help.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Cool. I don't know if I can afford his hour really or not. But they were great in terms of hooking us up with flying us out to the races and then making sure we got all our equipment dialed. And
so as far as Northern California, actually the country goes, you guys are one of the probably. How would you describe yourself?
I mean, domestic elite team.
So just a domestic elite team. You're one of the better domestic elite teams.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think Mike's is definitely. I'd say it's more supported than some of these pro teams out there. Definitely. Definitely one of the best domestic elite programs in the nation. Because I mean, you look at their record. Last year they won the TT. The year before that, the road race and the TT. The year before that was the U23 crit. So they've always been, you know, really big on the national scene. They've upgraded, you know, a couple guys to the professional ranks. And the support is something I've never had to worry about. I've never had to worry, you know, if we have funding to go to a race. I never had to worry, you know, if our entries are covered or any of that stuff. Which is a huge relief, because racing, it's a big enough stress in its own. There's so many people I know where having to pay out of pocket for these big travel races or find their ways there. And it's, you know, like, that's something I've been really, really happy with, is getting on mics and just being able to, being taken care of by them.
I remember when I was racing back in Boulder, and we had some friends, teammates, that weren't getting any money, and they had to, you know, do shitty jobs to try to work. And then they weren't able to, to race.
Yeah.
They weren't able to feed themselves well enough to do well racing. But they needed to. So it was just a vicious cycle of just
circling the drain.
Bad spiral. Yeah, exactly. And they were going down the drain.
Yeah.
And so it's always good just to get some support. You know,
right.
Race fees, this and that. But travel, I mean, that can make a big deal.
It's huge.
And it sounds like your job works out with this as well. So.
Yeah, no. My job, I mean, that's another thing. My boss is very well attuned to the bike racing life. So my coworker, or actually the guy who got me the job, he raced pro for 1 year, and my boss is very flexible with the schedule and very accommodating, which is great, because I don't know any other situation where I'd be able to work in a sort of serious environment.
Yeah.
And then race, you know, on the, I mean, I was working restaurant jobs, and that's, you know, more demanding.
You're on
your feet and stuff like that. And I wouldn't be able to get all the weekends off and all that stuff. But yeah, it's pretty good though.
Yeah. So is that your plan? You know, keep riding for next few years.
Right.
Kind of see where it goes.
Yeah. Kind of ride the wave out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now that when you move into Europe, when's the big move across over the seas?
No.
China?
China. Yeah, maybe. That's where the market's going, right?
Tour Linkawi.
Yeah.
One of those others.
No, I definitely want to keep racing with Mike's. And it was funny. Like, I was, like, I've always, like, everyone's like, oh, they want to go pro and do this and that. And I would still like to race, like, the next level pro. But, like, I'm realistic about where the market is in terms of, you know, pro teams. It's so many fewer teams than there was just a few years ago. And I was getting dropped on the last lap of the circuit race at Cascade. And I was just, you know, I was in so much pain. My hand was killing me. And it was such a hard weekend. And then it was like, you know, if this is as good as it gets, this is amazing. Because I was looking around, I was like, I get to suffer, I get to put myself through this, you know, for fun, kind of. And I get to push my body to these limits that I wouldn't be able to on my own. I get to go to all these races and have a full summer of just racing my bike. And, I would say I'm genuinely happy with the spot I'm at, you know.
Yeah, it's fun, and especially your fun situation, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you have any paternity tests going out there, but you have no kids right now. Nothing to really worry about.
No,
so
yeah. Check in the mail, though.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Once again, I do know a family law attorney.
Yeah, okay, cool.
If you need
Jack of all trades.
Yeah. So, which is good. So I like your attitude. I think it's great. It'll serve you well in life and obviously in cycling. And so... You know, so you got that going for you.
No,
if you're getting dropped. No, but you know what I mean. There's people out there that they remember the bad things and they can't get over that, and it's this kind of what lingers on, and and they don't stick in those kind of sports. You know, they're going to end up, you know, going with their buddies to the Brewfest on the weekend because it's much easier. You know, doing the hard things in life is rewarding, but there's a reason why they're rewarding, because you had to stick to them. You have to stay on the guy's wheel or whatever it is, you know, make it to the race. And
And I mean, like, I'm not perfect too. Like, I get to these races and sometimes I just get, like, bummed out, you know, from a bad performance or just being dropped or just, you know, just being, get my face smashed. And yeah, it is hard to sort of take myself out of that element. And yeah, I'd love to say I'm really zen about it and just take everything, you know, like...
No,
like,
I've seen you mad.
Yeah, sure you have. Yeah, you've seen me mad. Cool. Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, that's a bad reputation.
No, you know, we all grow.
No, but I mean, it's definitely it's hard to sort of always be happy with racing, especially when it's, you're just, yeah, sometimes there's a drought of motivation or results or whatever it is, life gets in the way, but,
Well, at one of my coaches in college, he had specifically talked about how you need to separate your results and how you do specifically on the bike to how you are as a human.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you see that so much. It's like, oh, you know, I won that, or I did this, and I feel so great. And then, you know, I had a crappy day racing or training. Oh, I'm a horrible person.
Right.
And the reality is it's neither, you know. Yeah. I mean, you could be just a crappy person.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if you do well, exactly. Right? Or the opposite.
And I see that too in people who do well. They, like, sort of mirror that on other people, like, oh, I did well in this race and you didn't, therefore you're a bad person.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it goes both ways. I mean, like, I don't get me wrong, I love winning and I love when our team wins too, and disassociating yourself from the results is a huge thing up until
and I think that's
on.
Why people lie to themselves so much, which brings me to the Strava, right?
Yeah.
The Strava ride title of, you know, I'm boxed in
for I really couldn't get around, or the, oh, cold, sick, you know, whatever, had to take care of us, you know, throwing up K at 3 a.m. and therefore I didn't get my best time on the Saturday group ride.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And one of my things I'm going to be looking for more is my favorite Strava ride titles.
Strava ride
to start
titles.
Calling them out.
Yeah.
Because I think they're humorous and it's fun to troll that. And I know Nate usually finds them for me.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure he's great at mining those out.
I don't. Did you have any that come to mind? We don't have to call the person. That's the tough part is calling the person. I saw a good one, a really good one from San Rafael last week.
Oh, really?
And I just can't call the person out because he's a pretty good writer. But you can't say I got boxed in.
You can't. I mean, you can never.
You know who didn't get boxed in? Your teammate, because he was off the front.
Exactly. Yeah, he boxed out. I don't know. I got out of there. And won, too. That's funny. The excuses thing is, it's like, so when I started racing with you guys, I was pretty young. I think I was like 18 when I.
Good Lord,
Jesus, yeah.
Some of the stuff we.
Yeah, I know.
Might have been illegal.
I know for you to be around me.
I don't think that law was in effect.
Yeah, or maybe. you learn a lot of growing up excuses, and that was a great thing about the team was there was never. After a race, there was never, you know, we never sat and, like, you know, made up why we didn't do well. You know, if anything, it was the opposite. We're like, oh, we should have done this, should have done that, and you learn from it. But there's so many people who just will never learn because you see that, well, you know, I was going to do this, but then they have an excuse for everything. And then it's just, it sucks, but it's almost more gratifying to be like, well, I just got beat today. And it doesn't mean that you give up, but you just know that there's someone better out there, and then you got beat, and good for them, and you're gonna work harder to not get beat. But Strava titles, that's a good one. Yeah, I'll send you good ones. I'll send you. I think my title from Cascade was just the lyrics of Paul Simon's song, so it's not very.
Which one?
It was Obvious Child.
Oh, okay.
That was good, yeah. I don't know, that got stuck in my head. I think it was playing in the car.
Well, I've had this for years. I mean, you probably do too, where you get a song stuck in your head during the race and you just can't get out. And sometimes it's the wrong lyrics. I'll start singing, you know, Barney songs to try to get that one out of my head. Right. This goes way back. This is like 96.
Yeah.
We had state crit championships. And I don't know why I remember. It was Rock the Casbah in my head for like an hour and a half.
Yeah. Well, because bike racing's so boring sometimes. And then you got to sing songs to yourself or whatever for like a 4-hour race. And then most time it's not the song that you want to remember. But yeah, that's great. Yeah. Right, How'd you do in 96? State crit champ.
I think I got third, tell you the truth. I have a medal somewhere, yeah.
Wow.
Scott Mercer, not Mercier. There was a Mercer and a Mercier.
Okay.
One rode for Saturn, one stole my girlfriend.
Two different people. Okay.
I don't know.
Sore subject.
Not really. I mean, I've got a wife now. It's not the one he stole.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you joining. Hanging out for a while today.
Yeah.
Hopefully this worked out. And welcome to the Panera Bread Studio.
Bread Studio, Folsom. That's a little loud. Yeah. Music.
So thanks and good luck this next year. And if you ever need a training partner, call Nate or someone else. I only do like 20 minutes at a time.
Yeah, 20 minutes. Yeah, if I need a trainer ride, I'll call you.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, man.
Thanks. It's not me.